Hello and welcome to Two Nerds Sitting on a Couch, in which two nerds sit on a couch and discuss science fiction and fantasy. Okay, the subject today is of three movies: Groundhog Day, Map of Tiny Perfect Things, and Palm Springs. And they are all... The unifying thing is that they are all movies in which a person is trapped in a single 24-hour period and has to keep reliving that period over and over and over. Groundhog Day is very much the, like, text. Like, it's the...
Well, in both other movies, the Map of Tiny Palm Springs name-checks it, you know. They're aware of what they're doing and why they're doing it, and they're like kind of signaling that they are going to have their own thing to say about it because, right. You know.
And I feel like I should say that we are going to spoil both Palm Springs and Map of Tiny Perfect Things.
I thought you already changed the name of this to Spoiler Alert.
No, that will never happen.
Yeah.
So just as a disclaimer, if like you don't want to be spoiled, because both Palm Springs and Tiny Perfect Things have kind of significant second act reveals that really change what you think about what's going on. Quick plots of the two. I mean, I feel like everybody knows what Groundhog Day is about.
Right? Well, yeah, and the plots of both of those movies start with, it's like Groundhog Day, except.
Right. and both, so, and Groundhog Day, it's like, you know, because it's the first one that does this, they have to be very, like, they very carefully, like bring you through what it's like to slowly have the realization that you're stuck in the same time and then like how he kind of manages his emotional state. And it's clear at the beginning of both Perfect Things and Palm Springs that both of their leads, which is a guy called Mark in Perfect Things and Niles in Palm Springs, they have been in this time loop for a significant period of time. Long enough that they are doing, like, I mean, and it's almost like it's become a visual shorthand at this point. Like, they're letting you know really, really quickly that this person is completely aware of, you know, the sort of roteness of their reality. You know, like...
And in both cases, kind of enjoying it.
Yeah, there is actually a playfulness about what they're doing, you know? So, well... You don't get that playfulness with Niles until after he gets to the wedding.
Yeah, but you also don't get that it's a repeat day for him as early as you do. Because, like, the Tiny Perfect Things, like, pretty much the opening credits scene is him, you know, catching coffee mugs and,
yeah.
You know, just sort of predicting the future.
Right, and he's doing things He digs around and like while he's like catching coffee mugs and kind of joking with his sister, in a way that he clearly knows what she's about to say.
Right.
He does things like get a pair of tongs out of the kitchen, and then several scenes later, he uses those tongs to like pull a woman's skirt down who has obviously like gotten it stuck in her underwear in the bathroom.
Right. You get the sense immediately. In the first 5 minutes of the movie, that like we're talking about the Groundhog Day, perfect day. Mm-hmm. He's living that perfect day. He's making people's lives better. Doesn't make a difference. He's not going to go away because that's not what this movie is about.
Right. And I was going to say because that you know like I feel like you're very committed to the perfect day thing, and it completely breaks down.
Right. Well, and I think that's
in these two movies.
And that's exactly why I'm committed to it, because I think that as a thesis. For Groundhog Day, it's awesome. It's like, you know, he has to, like, he goes through this, like, construction of what a perfect day would be in his mind. And then when he finally makes an actual perfect day where he's, like, selfless, he's accomplished, he's at ease with himself and with others, mm-hmm. like, that becomes the mechanism by which he escapes. And neither of these movies does that, right? I mean, like, right. And they both talk about, like, I mean, Map of Tiny Perfect Things is, like, I mean, it's... Talking, it's got the word perfect in it. I mean, it's mm-hmm. talking about that in the movie. And a lot of the plot centers around the map, where they're building the map of all these neat little things that happen in the town that are worth noting. That it's like, oh, that's really cool. You know, I mean, if there was only somebody to catalog all of them, then that would be really awesome, right? And so every morning he wakes up and draws this map.
Right.
So they can have it. But then in Palm Springs, you get the sense that maybe that happened at some point. But this is kind of like, it's more like Hot Tub Time Machine, where it's just sort of like, whatever, nothing matters. Yeah, we'll just keep doing this over and over again. It's fine.
I feel like the Niles character is definitely the most kind of ground down by it. Like, by the time you meet him, he has, like, literally time has lost meaning.
Yeah.
But then everything else does as well.
Like, right, because
he really just is completely beaten down. And I should and then maybe just like a quick synopsis, so that we can meet our characters and stuff. So in Palm Springs, a guy called Niles who is older but has a young, kind of hot yet stupid girlfriend. He is there for her to be a bridesmaid. He's the plus one at a wedding.
And is referred to throughout the movie as Misty's boyfriend.
Misty's boyfriend, yeah. Like, he doesn't... And interestingly, he is one of these characters in these that has the least backstory. Like, at one point... okay, so anyway, you get to see him kind of navigate his day, and you really only start to understand that he's living this day over and over and over when... You're at the wedding. He gets up to delivers this speech instead of the other person in this movie to sort of save her ass.
Which we find out later is the mechanism by which he can sleep with her.
Right.
He's discovered.
Right. So he saves her ass by delivering this very heartfelt sounding speech.
Mm-hmm. Which at the time looks like he's performing the perfect day, right? So he has this speech that he's clearly prepared, even though he's just Misty's boyfriend and should have no reason to know all these people or, you know, anything about them. And it ends up coming off really well, you know? So it's like he's got that down in the first 5 minutes, like Palm Springs, where, the first 5 minutes or maybe
you mean Perfect Things, that was Palm Springs.
Right. And they're both movies are sort of telegraphing that they're doing the Bill Murray thing and it's obviously not working.
Right. Right. So then in Palm Springs, so after that, there's a series of events that result in, the girl that he's basically trying to seduce, who is the sister of the bride and also a bridesmaid. She ends up getting sucked into the time loop with him. Which is basically you have to go into this cave.
Well, because the third guy, Roy, shows up, shoots him with an arrow out of nowhere, and you're just sort of like, now I have no idea what's going on. This is super weird.
Yeah.
Because now there's another guy who's obviously got it out for him, and he gets shot in the ass with an arrow or whatever and, like, crawls into the cave, which is clearly the, you know, that's the jump point or whatever. And so she follows him in, even though he yells, you know, no, don't follow me in. Which, of course, doesn't work because it's a movie.
Right. So, yeah. So unlike Groundhog Day, both Tiny Thing, Perfect Things, and this movie have two people in dialogue about their situation, not just one. So these two kind of, you know, they are a little cagey with each other, but they do actually just kind of hang out continuously then from that point on.
Yeah, more or less, because like Passengers, although in Passengers, she doesn't really realize that it was on purpose. But even in this, like, it's played as it's not on purpose, but you're not really sure. It's possible that maybe he just liked her enough to want to drag her in. But I think I got the impression that he was not. I mean, Roy was a surprise.
But why
were they by the cave? I mean, there's a lot of...
Yeah, I guess. I just feel like the whole Roy situation went so horribly. Oh, and so there's a third person in the time loop, which is a guy called Roy, who's played by J.K. Simmons,
who is
so
amazing.
Wonderful. And he's incredibly angry that he's been sucked into this time loop. He lives in...
Irvine. Because you got to find your Irvine later.
Which is
later.
Significantly far away. So he only drove down to the wedding, kind of on a lark, I think. So he only shows up every once in a while, but his relationship with Niles is extremely antagonistic. He's extremely pissed off that he's been sucked into this time.
So every once in a while he shows up to murder him, and then...
Yeah. And so, I mean, so I don't actually think that he would want another person who wants to murder him in this situation.
No, like, that's somebody true.
Somebody who's closer.
Definitely, no. I mean, and it is played as if he, you know, doesn't want her there, but it sure is nice to have a girlfriend who remembers things. Because, I mean, this is one of the things we had talked about, where if you're in a time loop and that resets every day, like, it's like, you know, you go back to your save game, right? So you are a completely fresh new person. You can kill yourself over and over again, burn yourself horribly, stare at the sun all day. But when you wake up, you'll have the memory of those things, but not the physical evidence that those things have happened. So it just doesn't matter what you do. But the problem with that is that then, like, the way he kind of talks about it is that, like, all of these other people are asleep. And they talk about that in both movies, mm-hmm. Tiny Perfect Things and Palm Springs. And it's kind of the idea is that you, because of the save game, nothing really matters. But once you add a new person, now all of a sudden... your actions have consequences again. Like, because up to this point, nothing had any consequences. And, you know, or, I mean, I guess Roy kind of points to, yeah, there are some consequences because he dragged Roy in. And now all of a sudden there's another person who has a memory, a real memory of what's happened and what kind of an asshole you were to them. Right. And so, like, now there are real consequences to him. And this kind of points to him also maybe not wanting to bring her in because he could sleep with her as many times as he wanted to otherwise.
Well, right, that's what I'm saying. But... yeah, but both of them, it's like it now introduces memory into what had been a consequence-free environment.
Yeah.
Although, interestingly, so in Tiny Perfect Things, both of them, so this one follows a guy, and he finds a girl who is also in the time loop. And she
Finds out in a very funny scene where he's been trying to sleep with this one girl the whole time. And, like, to protect her, he has to knock a beach ball out of the way. And he keeps trying to do it every day and can't get it quite right.
Right.
You know, and then she just sort of shows up, whacks it out of the way, and walks off. And he's like,
okay, that's new.
That's new.
Like, that's not what happens here. So, but she's incredibly cagey. And when he starts asking her things like, you know, what about, you know, messing with things or stealing cars or the rest of it? And she's like, this could reset at any minute. I don't want it. Like, she is still living in a world with consequence.
Right. What if this is February 3rd, you know?
Like, she's just like, I am not playing with that. And they are incredibly risk averse.
Yeah.
Like, both of them do not do things that will result in, you know, permanent damage.
Yeah, and I think that that's because this movie is about something different, and because of that, it's there. I mean, you kind of can't explore the whole, like, yeah, I killed myself a dozen times, because that would mess with the narrative of the movie. Whereas in Palm Springs, you totally could, and they did.
Right. Although, I mean, that's the one thing he says a couple of times, Niles does, when she starts acting, you know, she...
In Palm Springs.
Because, so the reveal with Palm Springs is that, because she, you know, seems to be having a bad morning. Like, every morning is a bad morning for her.
Well, and you can say why. I mean, it's not like it's,
I'm just you're not about spoil to, it. For fuck's sake. So, and her bad morning is that the night before she slept with her goddamn sister's fiance, woke up next to him. And so every morning in this time loop, she wakes up next to her sister's fiance. And it's like, I mean, I'd said this before, but I mean, I feel like there is a way in which the Palm Springs is about either addiction or, like, compulsive bad choices. Because every single day she wakes up in that hangover. Every single fucking day. And the way that there's a certain sameness to, like, addictive behaviors. Or, you know, like, there's a compulsiveness to her self-destruction, which I think is sort of played out in that narrative. And so... Right.
Like, rock bottom, every day.
It is. It is literally...
I mean, she even complains, like you were saying before, where she's like, you know... My family thinks I drink and fuck too much. And he's like, you know, why do they think that? And she's like, because I drink and fuck too much. Like, she's aware of the problem.
Right.
And I guess the first step is admitting that there's a problem. Right. But the problem is she can't do anything about it.
Right.
Like, it's there every day.
And she even said that before she got sucked into the time loop. Like, she, like, she is already, like, on one level, she's already in this fucking time loop.
Yeah.
You know, like, she is making bad decisions every single day involving, like, self-destructive and addictive behavior.
Yeah.
And like, but, and I don't want to, like, oversell it. Like, I don't think that, obviously, this isn't some sort of don't do drugs tract or some bullshit. But I do think that there's, there's definitely, like, a sense that that sort of works as a, and because part of it is that, like, so she and Niles sort of become closer together and they begin to have, like, real emotional attachments to one another, which culminates in them sleeping together. And the next day, she has a total fucking meltdown.
Yeah, well, and this kind of happens in Tiny Perfect Things as well, where, like, they're getting closer, and he's like, I just want to kiss you. And she's like, no, because, you know, I mean, the clock doesn't reset on us. So, like, I want to be friends with you and not screw it up. Which is, like, that's the thing with consequences, is that they're living a real life now. All of a sudden, it's like, this is how you would behave if there's, like, some new guy that shows up. You're not just going to instantly, like, jump into a relationship with him because those things have consequences, you know?
And, well, like, and also, I mean, it's like, it's the only thing that has consequences. Yeah. Because you could do that. I mean, you could literally get yourself to, like, bang the pool girl every day and it would never have a consequence.
Yeah, or you could bang the person that you dragged into this thing 1,000 times.
Before.
And once you bring her in, all of that stuff is, like, irrelevant or a dream. I mean, it's not totally irrelevant, but it's, like, now it matters. Like, now all of a sudden it's a thing. It's but a thing. I do think, like, just to kind of circle back to your point about addiction, which is, I think that even if that's the case, like, we kind of talked about these two movies being about, like, Palm Springs is kind of about regret and Tiny Perfect Things is kind of about grief, right?
I don't think I don't ultimately think it's about regret, though, because I feel like regret is looking backwards, and this is quite literally just you are spinning your wheels.
Right,
you
but I mean,
are not
that's,
going anywhere.
As a like metaphor for the mechanism of regret, that's how it works, right? I mean, like, you regret things because it keeps coming up, and you keep thinking about it over and over, and you can't escape it. And so, like, what she's doing through the course of the movie is coming to terms with it. You know, I mean, it's like in the same kind of, like, we kind of talked about the stages of denial or the stages of grief. But, like, she goes through this crazy phase, and, you know, I mean, finally she gets to acceptance where she starts studying physics to try and find a way out, because there's an actual mechanism for getting in, so, like, that provides a possibility, and so she starts doing studying or whatever once she sort of hits her rock bottom in her rock bottom.
Well, and she also cuts off Niles completely.
Yeah, she just disappears, and so he's back to being alone again, but you get the sense that, like, he's just sort of a cipher. I mean, he doesn't really change all that much through the movie, except for the very end, where, like, it's just like, oh no, I want to be like a person who would be a boyfriend.
But it's not just that he's a, yeah, I mean, but I think he's almost deliberately a cipher, because there's a point at which she says, okay, well, what the hell do you do for a living? And he's like, shh, 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 shh.
Yeah, I don't remember.
He just, yeah, he.
Well, at the end, he's like, oh, I should probably go pick up my dog. And she's like, you have a dog?
Right.
Why didn't that ever come up before? Because we don't know anything about him. Because the movie's not about him.
No.
It's about her.
Right. Right.
Like Tiny Perfect Things. Like it's not about him.
Right. And so now that we've discussed that, let's give you the plot of Tiny Perfect Things, because that also has a third act reveal. So, I mean, I thought that the cute thing about Tiny Perfect Things is that that girl is like the opposite of a manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah, she is totally a somber, human
girl.
Drag.
Yeah. Like, she, you know, so when he finds, like, he's the manic pixie dream girl, actually.
Yeah.
He is literally performing that function.
Yep. All through the whole first part of the movie.
Yeah. So, you know, because he's actually a really, like, lovely, kind-hearted person. Like, he has a certain joie de vivre that has not been ground, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what Niles in Palm Springs is ground the fuck down. He's like, everything is meaningless. I don't know, whatever. Have a beer.
But, I mean, the thing about Tiny Perfect Things guy is that this is a bad day for him, because his dad wants to have this talk about his future. So he sees this as this, like horrible day because it's just this conversation happened.
He just
like wishes that maybe if it weren't the day that his dad has this conversation with him.
But that's just the crimp on the end. Like he's very, it's not like this is the worst day ever.
It's just the bad thing that happens at the end of the day.
Even though he's an adolescent, he really isn't like prone to catastrophizing, actually.
No, but it is sort of like a discussion of like, you can't be happy-go-lucky your whole life. You have to like think about your future. And right. he's like, I have no future. And his dad's like, millennials, you know. And it's like, I mean,
Zoomers,
right? But it's funny because it's like they're talking about different things, but then that sort of leads him, because unlike in Palm Springs where he doesn't really have a character arc, mm-hmm. In Tiny Perfect Things he has a character arc.
He does,
and it is understanding that he needs to listen to the people around him and pay attention to the people around him. Kind of more on the, you know, Bill Murray side of things, but it's really more about,
at one level, I think
listening.
It's definitely like young adult in a way that the other two movies aren't.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
not quite as young adult, young as City of Ember was.
No. That's not even young adult, though. That's even.
No, I know. I mean, it's definitely young adult, though. And they're high school as opposed to Palm Springs, which is definitely post college.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I mean, like Niles is even described as the older guy.
Right.
And I looked it up, and what's his face? The actor is about. He's like 40.
Jake Peralta.
Jake Peralta is like 40 something.
Yeah.
But yeah. So when he finds her, when he finds the opposite of this manic pixie dream girl, you know, he's the one who's very like, yay, I found somebody. Everybody else is sleepwalking, and like we finally have, you know, like we can finally like just do stuff. And like, hey, what do you have, right?
Yeah.
Like, and he's just it's actually kind of endearing because I feel like it's sort of like the way like you get crushes and then you get all like stupid and planny. Like I'm going to plan a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
But just I'm going to plan some dumb meetup.
And like, she's doing almost everything she can to avoid him.
Yeah.
I mean, they exchange phone numbers, which he has to actually remember, which I think is so funny. I mean, in this day and age.
It's actually cute though.
You know, where he has to remember her number and he has to, because he can't write it on his hand. Won't be there in the morning.
No.
And in this one, the mechanism is different. Like, in Groundhog Day, it was just whenever you fell asleep. So, presumably, as long as you could stay up. And that's the way it is in Palm Springs, too. Where if you just stay up, you know, you're fine. But Body Snatchers, like, once you fall asleep, you're back in Palm Springs.
Right.
And with Tiny Perfect Things, it's just midnight. You just, all of a sudden, everything rewinds and resets. And so, you don't get past midnight, no matter what.
Right. Yeah. It's just over then. So, but, you know, and he, like, slowly draws her out. Largely through, like, it's first done by her, where she's like, I want to show you something.
Right.
And they go out to this lake that's...
Was it first by her? Because, I mean, they had talked about it first, and then they had the whole incident with the bird poop where he stops the guy from
getting
shot on the head.
I mean, because this is where the name of the thing comes from, is that, I thought it was her, where she's like, I want to show you something, and then... She takes him out to this lake, and she's like, wait for it. And then this, like, eagle comes down and snatches a fish out of the water and flies away. And and he is just like, oh, my God. You know, it's just, like, really, really... Then they have this discussion about...
We should make a map.
No, but that happens later. They start talking about the tiny perfect things. Like, these little moments that they've discovered because they've been trapped in this loop for so long. That, you know, so then they start showing each other the little tiny perfect things that are in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a old lady playing cards has a perfect royal flush and like does a little like dance.
Mm-hmm. Because how often does that happen?
Right. Or there's like this like kind of hangdog looking guy texting on a bench and then a truck pulls up behind him. And it makes it look like he has angel wings on.
Because there's, like, wings painted on the truck.
Yeah. Or, you know, so there's a bunch of these like this. And they...
Meanwhile, she's been looking for this dog. And mm-hmm. she's pretty convinced that she can't find it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when they see that and they walk off and then the dog is, like, right there. And you're like, it was right there. Just turn around.
Right. But, yeah. So, I mean, And he's the one really driving it, you know, because he's the one who has this sort of beautiful life philosophy where he's, you know, he's definitely like you know, the Manic Pixie Dream Boy, where he really is looking on the bright side of life.
Yeah, and he can't believe his luck that, you know, she's shown up into his life. And for some reason, she doesn't want to hang out with him, but that's just a minor setback. Right. And, you know, he'll work on it and like, make this right. awesome. But she keeps getting these phone calls, and she's like, no, I know, I have to go, whatever. And then she has to leave, and it's like, what is it that you have to do? It happens every day.
Every day at 6 p.m.
Like, what is it that you have to do, you know?
She gets a call, and off she goes. And so, like, you know, and he's, like, kind of sulky and about it.
Well, because there's a guy named Jared who's a med, he's like, who is it? And she's like, he's like a med student. Uh-huh. So, like, the conclusion we're supposed to draw is that, like, she's got some horrible breakup with her boyfriend that she needs to deal with.
Right. And, I mean, like, once that started happening, given her affect, I was like, oh, shit. That means probably somebody's dying, right?
Right, because if that's what it's covering up right. for, then like, it's got to be worse.
Yeah, it's got to be, it's bad. Whatever yeah. it is bad enough that, like, it's, like, I mean, you sort of get the impression that he thinks that maybe it's a boyfriend, but it's like, no, there's no boyfriend on earth that you care enough about to leave every single day at 6 o'clock. And so it turns out that it's her mother who is dying of cancer. And it's not even that her mother dies that day. It's just that her mother's dying of cancer.
And like, that's the call from Jared, is that it's like, the time is near.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is ultimately, like, how she creates the mechanism for looping this day is that she's like, my mom could die tomorrow, and I can't live in that world. And right. so, loop, you know, I mean, and then...
Right.
So she, like, we sort of discover that she's the mechanism for this.
Right. She's the, like, it turns out in the end that the story has been about her this whole time. And that the power of her grief and her need for tomorrow not to come is what warps the world. You know, it's yeah. like the gravity that warps time.
And the ultimately the way to escape, it turns out, is through the map that he's created. So it's a map of events in time and mm-hmm. space. And she, you know, talks early on about this tesseract that she was always fascinated with. So it's like, Chekhovian tesseract will show up later. It'll be on the test. And so...
Chekhovian tesseract.
So she, like, you know, kind of maps out all of these things and comes up with this kind of serial killer-y conspiracy theory thing involving string. And,
right.
And you know, like, laying it out and shining a light through it.
It was kind of great on one level because it's so, like, writer-y. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that whole thing is so, it's, like, almost showing the, like, because there's another level on which these sorts of timey-wimey narratives are about storytelling in the first place.
Well, and particularly with Lev Grossman, who I think is,
yeah,
the, you know, and that's, he's the reason I think I wanted to watch Map of Tiny Perfect Things in the first place, because he tweeted about it, and I was like, oh my god, I can't wait, and that was like months ago, so right. finally when it came out, it was like, well, okay, now I can watch it.
He didn't just tweet about it, he wrote the short story that it was based on, and then he wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, and it's, and he's a fantastic writer. I mean, like, his, I've read all the Magician series, and they're, I really like them. I thought they were really well written. But he definitely is a novelist who then wrote a screenplay, and I think that kind of shows in how writery right. the screenplay ended
up. It is definitely writery, which I don't begrudge at all.
Yeah, like, no, I think it's great.
Right. I mean, because there is a sense in which, like, time travel narratives tend to be kind of mechanistic in a way. I mean, I've said this before about, like, the Watchmaker and the you know, like, there's this sort of divine clockworks about them.
Yeah.
And anyway, so with this one, I thought it was absolutely fascinating. With the other ones, the goal is to sort of, like, they fall into these loops either through, you know, bad choices or, you know, bad attitudes. And
or bad luck.
Bad luck. And this one is very much constructed on purpose. And she, like, yeah, they all get out of it by learning something or whatever. But I thought it was really very, very different having it be about grief.
Yeah. And I think that this is something like, so I think that, you know, we kind of touched on this a little bit where I feel like Map of Tiny Perfect Things is about recovering from grief, and Palm Springs is about overcoming this regret, right? Because it's like she's trapped in this horrible like the worst day of her biggest shame, and like the movie is kind of like a metaphor for how you come to terms with that. And
it's not just coming to terms with that. I mean, I feel like with her, it's more like, with her meaning the girl from Palm Springs, mm-hmm. it's more that she has to make a very conscious decision to change her fucking life. And then go about the process of actually changing it.
Yeah, and which, I mean, like, every day that they, like kind of show this whole montage of her learning physics and, mm-hmm. and YouTubing with various, or not YouTubing, but, like, video chatting with various professors or whatever. But you, I mean, you kind of forget that, like, she still every day wakes up in the bed of her sister's fiancé.
Yep.
And, like, but she doesn't let that stop her. She goes to the diner and learns physics.
Yep.
For possibly years, probably years, she spends doing this. Enough that, like, you know, Niles forgets about her and sort of moves on with his life because she just sort of disappeared.
But
and
he
sort of like Roy,
he,
I mean, it's just, like, well,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's, we'll move on. But he's also just like, he just wallows.
Yeah,
that's
but he's,
his mechanism is fucking wallowing.
But he's been in there for so long that it's not even wallowing so much as just exist. I mean, because, like, we kind of talked about this a little bit where, like, if you, you know, if you have an addiction, right, and you're, like, trying to recover whatever, or you're not trying to recover. Let's say you're just trying to get further and further and, like, rock bottomist rock bottom. The problem with the world without consequences is you can never get there. You can never have that wake-up moment where it's like, wow, I really fucked up, because what are you going to do that's not going to just be fixed tomorrow, right? I mean, like, there, it is impossible to then, you know, move forward from that,
that
without some sort of external thing that jars your reality, you know? And I think that was kind of so that's the trajectory with her, but he is just sort of beyond all of that. This is why he's a cipher as a person, because, you know, we don't know anything about his past. All we know is, like, who he is and what he's done so far, and what he's done is kind of everything. He's done everything. He's done it. He's been in there for so long, he might actually have been telling the truth when he said he couldn't remember what he did for a living, because all he's ever done is attend this wedding.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's all he's ever done.
Honestly, I mean, there is definitely an aspect in which these are hell. There is a sort of interesting case with Roy, who's the guy who, like, he stops coming around after, you know, after Niles and the girl sleep together, and then she has her complete meltdown.
She totally kills him with the police car.
She totally kills him. And that's something that Niles says over and over. He's like, obviously death doesn't matter, but pain is real.
Yeah.
And he says that multiple times.
Because what's worse is, like, they won't let you sleep, and so you're just sort of kept awake in pain in the ICU. That's a long, sad way to die. And that's what she's done to Roy.
Right.
By hurting him in that particular way, he's not allowed to die for a very long time. And that's his wake-up call, where he realizes that what he's doing is insane.
Yeah.
Trying to kill Niles this whole time is just so pointless you know.
But anyway, so after that meltdown, which really completely affects how everybody interacts with their environment.
Yeah.
At that point.
And you get the sense that years pass now where none of them interact with each other.
Right. And so, but eventually Niles gets so kind of bummed out that he goes to talk to Roy.
Drives
all the way to Irvine, finds him, and is like, you need to talk to me. And Roy was like, yeah, I mean, that day with your crazy girlfriend really changed my perspective. And he's sitting there in his, like, kind of suburban house. And he's got young children, and he sort of makes a crack about how, you know, like, if he hadn't been as drunk as he was, he wouldn't have had them because he would have put the condom on, right, or whatever. but, because J.K. Simmons is kind of old to be having, you know, 5-year-old children. Anyway, but he's like, he's clearly just decided to make the absolute best of it, which is that he gets to wake up every day with his really attractive family, and he's like grilling tuna steaks and he
sets up a lawn chair in the backyard.
And he's sad about, he's like, I will never get to see them grow up, which is actually quite depressing.
Yeah. The quip he makes about his son, like, is watering the same turd.
He's watering the dog shit. Yeah. And he's like, it's beautiful and also gross. And that's life. It's beautiful and gross.
And yet he sets up a lawn chair and watches it every day.
Yeah. And he even says that to Niles, where he's like, you have to find your Irvine. You know, that's where he is. That's where he lives. And so he's definitely come to a sort of peace about his environment, because he's like, well, I mean,
this is the best place. This is the best way I can spend my time.
This is the best of all possible worlds.
And I don't need to go all the way out to Palm Springs to, you know, kill
somebody.
Niles over and over again, because, you know, he just sort of he came to terms with it and let go of that, you know, in the same way that our heroine has to, why don't we know her name?
Sarah.
She has to go, come to terms with her shame, and then find a way out, because, like, that's all that she cares about is escaping. Like, she wants to put that in her past.
Yeah.
And the problem is, right now, she's living a present in the past. And so, like, you know, it ends up being this crazy thing where she straps some C4 to a goat and sends it in, and then the goat disappears and whatever. So we know there's if not a way out, there's a way out. There's a way to stop it from happening. And whether that gets you back to some sort of reality that is meaningful is you know, an open question. But it's like, at this point, you know,
you can't,
even if you're killing yourself, she at least it's different.
Right. And she just can't keep doing it. Which is definitely different from Tiny Perfect. I feel like you were winding up to a point, and then we fell down into the Palm Springs hole.
Well, okay. So the thing with Tiny Perfect Things is the mechanism for getting out ends up being mapping all of these Tiny Perfect Things. Right. And so this gets kind of back to the Perfect Day thesis that we were talking about with Groundhog Day, where he's like, he's ends up inadvertently constructing the perfect day, not the one he thought it was, but the one that actually was, that is, that gets him out of it, right? So, like, that's the way he escapes is by just having everything line up, and then, you know, and it's just, he's just living his life the best he can.
Yeah.
Learning piano, whatever.
I don't see in Tiny Perfect Things that it is a perfect day narrative.
No, it's literally
about tiny perfect things.
Right, and that's kind of the point I'm making with the perfect day. Like, you keep thinking that I'm trying to make it work in all of these things, but the whole point is that it doesn't, and that's why it gives you a nice way to look at these movies in terms of their differences from Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Because they're not, right? I mean, and they keep trying to create these perfect days, right? Or at the very least, just have fun in them. But with the map of Tiny Perfect Things, like, they're constructing a map of perfect things. They're trying to find all of these things. And sort of the thing that behind it is, like, what if we could map all of them, and then maybe we would, you know, find a way, there would be a pattern, and we could find the way out or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which turns out to be the case, but, like, there's one missing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the mechanism, is that it's like, she knows where it happens and when it happens. And it's because the shadows formed by this 3D strings and map, you know, like strings hanging from the map.
The writerly construct.
It forms an outline of the points of a tesseract, and it's missing one of the points. So it's this four-dimensional. It's really funny, because when she's describing the tesseract, she's like, you know, what if, like, as three-dimensional beings, we cast a two-dimensional shadow. So what about a four-dimensional being casting a three-dimensional shadow? Is that what we are? Is that what our lives are? Is that how we trace our lives through time? Because they talk about time being the fourth dimension. She's like, no, it's not. That's not how it works. Like, but whatever. Anyway, so this map that she creates out of the map of Tiny Perfect Things is it's like a 2D shadow of a 4D object, right? So it's this thing that's like, you know, okay, I guess. But anyway, so, like, that helps her connect the dots to where it should be. Because she can see, like, where the string would have to hang and how far down it would have to hang. So she knows what time and place it'll be. And it's at the pool at 7 p.m. Which then she's like, hey, you have to come to the pool at 7 p.m. But the reality is, it's like the story itself is about her coming to terms with her mother's death. Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, she needs to get past that. And that's sort of like, once she has this revelation, it's like that just sort of means that she has come to terms with her mother's death and is ready to move on.
Right.
Because she created this loop in the first place, and now she's ready to leave it.
She wouldn't even bother with creating that kind of map or you know, creating the string thing if she weren't ready to get out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not looking for a way out until you're looking for a way out.
Right.
And because we were discussing, like, so, like, I read a review that was kind of irritated because it was like, why isn't this story told from her perspective?
Right.
Which I think is a valid question.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is that they're trying to make it about
some internet person.
It is about the relationship between those two. And I think that this is why I like Groundhog Day so much, is because it does that, but he's the only one who goes through it. And in both Palm Springs and Tiny Perfect Things, they have other people that they have to drag into it so they can talk about it and have it go on, where, you know, if it were from her point of view, would she even need a boyfriend? And then what would it be about? Like, I mean, I don't know. It just, from the very beginning when I first saw it and I was like, oh, it's Lev Grossman. It's like, you know, I decided for some reason that this was Quentin and Alice from The Magicians.
They definitely have Quentin and Alice energy, which is totally fine. Like, I think it's a good energy to have.
Oh, no, totally. I mean, and because, like, she's got a very, like, technical, like, you know, scientific bent, where because she's talking about this Tesseract in science
terms, like, or whatever. He's, like, less of a hot mess than Quentin, though, by
yeah, no, totally. A lot.
You know, like, he, because
he's... But like Quentin, he's concerned about his future.
Right, he is. You know, but he's also... college age. I just kind of appreciate, like, what a kind of softy he is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, his, even his big conflict with his dad is pretty low stakes, you know? Like, well, it's just...
yeah. And actually, his conflict with his dad, this is the thing I like about Tiny Perfect Things far more than Palm Springs, because he develops as a character in a way that Jake Peralta never will, you know? I mean, because he's just going to be...
Well, because we don't know enough
through his life, and it's fine.
We don't know enough about him. Like, yeah, just,
I mean,
his big
character arc is deciding that he wants to go with her, even if it means he's going to die, and that's like, I don't know, whatever. I guess
it's meaningful. Or thinking that maybe things might possibly, in some way, have meaning. Like, he's not even ready to commit to things having meaning.
But in Tiny Perfect Things, when he, you know, he talks with his dad and, like, is very mean to his dad about whatever. His dad's writing some book or whatever, and he's like, your stupid book, if you hadn't quit your job, whatever. And his sister, like, this is the first time he's ever had a conversation with his sister, apparently, because she's like, no, he got laid off, and he's writing that book, and mom is really mad at him, and, like, because his mom has been missing through this whole thing, because she, like, what wakes him up in the morning is her getting in the car and leaving, and so, you know, he just misses his mom. Which is a little foil to her, you know.
I actually thought that was dying, like, really affecting. Like, once he figures out that her mother is dying, he, like, stops his mom's car and makes her hug him.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, that's so sad.
Yeah. Well, and that, because, I mean, that kind of, it makes you realize that his problems, while they seem big, you know, like, your sorrow and your fear is a gas that fills the vessel, right?
I mean,
it's like, it seems really big because it fills you, but, you know, also the death of your mother would fill you, you know, but it just with more intense, you know, still the same size.
Worse. I mean, like, kind of people, like, this is one of those things where people are like, well, why should I read Catcher in the Rye about a you know, a overindulged wealthy kid? And it's like, you know, actually, it turns out that psychic pain is psychic pain.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, that, like, just because you are in a privileged position doesn't mean you don't feel pain. Like,
yeah, right.
Which is not to say that, like, we should prioritize it.
Well, and just because other people feel worse pain than you do doesn't negate your pain.
Right. You know? Right.
Like,
exactly.
And it also, like, I mean, even better, it helps you understand their pain and empathize,
right?
Even though you're not experiencing it, and maybe you haven't experienced it like that, but at least you can be like, dude, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah,
what
but,
can I
then,
do for you?
And then at the same time, though, it's like, it is also nice to get the wake up call of, like, yeah, I mean, I may have stubbed my toe, but I'm going to be able to walk it off.
Right.
Yeah. You know, to sort of
at midnight, the clock will reset and I won't feel
like
that.
To have a little bit of perspective on some of those things is a good thing. And so,
on February 3rd, when Bill Murray wakes up next to Annie McDowell, like, how terrifying would that be to suddenly like recognize your own mortality and be like, I can't just kill myself to end the day early, yeah. You know, like,
and there's no do-overs and the rest of it, which is actually, I think it works really well in Tiny Perfect Things, because that's really tomorrow's going to bring something really bad.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the movie.
It is an inevitability that the next day is going to be the worst day of your life.
Yeah.
To date.
Yeah. Why does the sun have to go out? I don't want it to.
Yeah, right. And so, it's that she's able to sort of accept that, you know, like, I'm just going to have to go through this fucking horrible day is pretty intense.
Yeah, well, especially because she chooses that over, like, going through the next day when her mother actually, you know, presumably would die.
That's what I'm saying, like, though. Yeah. Is it, like, choosing to go to tomorrow when her mother's going to die is a really intense choice. Like, it's not lightly undertaken. It's not undertaken, you know, with anything but clarity at that.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, and in some ways it's like, I mean, because that's the little kid reaction, right? Like, you know, I don't want it to. And in some ways that's the parallel in between both of their stories, is that, like, he needs to, like, grow up and think about his future. And in some ways that's what she needs to do. Like, she needs to get beyond this, you know, she needs to deal with the grief and then go on with her life.
Right.
Either way, which is why I think he's there. I mean, I think he is an important part of the story, because he is representative of her moving on with her life.
Well, he's also, I have said this a couple times, but he is kind of a manic pixie dream boy.
Yeah.
because what does the manic pixie dream girl do? She comes into our protagonist's life, who is like hang dog, or I mean, like Nathan Rabin coined the term from Elizabethtown, where what's his face comes home and Orlando Bloom comes home because his father's died, I believe, and then Kristen Dunst just gives him mixtapes and is adorable and blonde. and that's in some ways what he does, where he shows up and he's like, actually, let's explore the sort of beauty of the cool shit that's all around.
Yeah, look, I built a whole diorama of the moon.
Like, look, come here, look at this. Isn't this really amazing? It's like, he really is, like forcing her to, like, live in the moment and see the beauty of everything around her. And you can see her, like, kind of, I mean, I think she plays it pretty well. Like, I wasn't really all that excited about her at the beginning of the movie, but the way she's, like, sort of into things, and then, like, the corners of her mouth start going down, and then she leaves.
Yeah.
You know, like, because she keeps getting drawn back to her grief, it like, sucks all the color out of the room.
Yeah.
You know, and nothing has any, you know, nothing has any taste, and everything is ash.
Right.
And it's, yeah, I don't know. I think she does actually a pretty good job.
Yeah. End. Oh, yeah, definitely. So we were talking about the idea of picking your day. You know, like, what day would you pick of your entire life up to now to live over and over again?
Right. And if I had to pick, I mean, it would be a day that I didn't have a lot of appointments and I was centrally located.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you'd pick your day off so that you could do all of the things that you were looking forward to doing, you know, for the rest of your life, which is basically retirement. But also,
you don't want to pick a day that's, like, actually, like, your really, really good memory, because you don't actually want to sully it.
Right, because you would live that day over and over again, and it would just get boring, and then, you know, right, so then you'd kill yourself in the middle of it. But, like, so then... The next step of that is, because we were also talking about, like, you know, live every day as if it's your last, and it's like, shouldn't we be living every day as though it would be the one that we'd be stuck in a loop, and try to, like, maximize our amazingness every day, which you can't, like, that's not how people work, right?
Right.
Because, you know, whatever. But anyway, then it got me thinking about the whole, like Groundhog Day is the ultimate plot of it is Bill Murray achieving nirvana, right? Which is
Yeah, which enlightenment.
Is enlightenment. And he's, so he has become egoless, that he is living a full life in the present moment.
Right, because it's like the four tenets of Buddhism are like, you know,
eating,
like,
drinking, smoking, and rock and roll.
Fucking. No, but just like all, like, life is suffering. Suffering is caused by ego or desire, and to, you know, if you get rid of those things, then you don't. And they don't mean desire in like the sexual sense. They mean it in like wanting shit.
Right. You get rid of your ego, which is the thing that drives you.
Right. And so and that's what he does. He does absolutely achieve enlightenment in the sense that he is living selflessly and presently every moment.
Yeah, well, and then, so I guess the next step of that was, like, the waking up on February 3rd, right, and realizing that now you're mortal and you could totally, you know, die after having achieved enlightenment. So he achieved enlightenment, but then, so the other movies, like Palm Springs is absolutely not about enlightenment at all, right? I mean, Palm Springs is about bettering yourself to the point where you can have control over your destiny. In any way, because like you can kill yourself over and over and over again, and that doesn't change anything. But in Palm Springs, you have to blow up. You have to be in an explosion in the cave in order to escape, in order to find Nirvana. Right? I mean, you have to study physics to get to that point in the first place.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is that like I don't think that that's betterment in the sense of like the mechanism in Palm Springs is not. There's a morally determined architecture in Groundhog Day, which I do not believe is present in Palm Springs.
No, absolutely not.
It when you say betterment, you're just meaning like she's learning about physics.
Yeah, she's not achieving enlightenment at all. Like that's not what the movie is about.
Right. She's not achieving enlightenment. She's also not trying to do anything in terms of like, but like. In fact, they do that, like, because they reference Groundhog Day, where, you know, she's like, oh, well, what I need to do is what Phil Connors did, which is do the best thing I can do. And so she stops the wedding and whispers something in her sister's ear. And I really should have watched it again, because, like, I was wondering if, like, did she tell her sister that she had banged her sister's...
Yeah, but there's no way she did because her sister looked happy after she told her. There's no way her sister would have been happy.
Did she look happy, though?
If you want to be the best person you can be, are you going to tell your sister that you banged her fiancé at her wedding? Is that the best person you can be?
No, that's really terrible.
I mean, that's what happened there.
But I just... I'm not... I think that's a terrible thing to do, but I don't know that she's in a world where she would understand that's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, still, I don't see it. I mean, because her sister didn't freak out. She didn't. Yeah, like, no. It was just sort of fine.
Although you do get the impression that her sister's kind of a saint.
Yeah, she. Well, I mean, they make that impression very clear that she's a saint.
I mean, she's like literally
does all the charity work and
like bone marrow to babies.
Right. So I mean, that's on purpose, right? Because the sister is such a like bigger fuck up now because like she's got that sort of thing to live up to. But yeah, I mean, so you know, I think that like with Groundhog Day, it's achieving enlightenment, right? It's like getting this sort of release that way, which is very karmic. And that's what the movie is about, right? I mean, that's like a very moralistic way of looking at like he is very rooted in the venal, in the world. He just wants to sleep with people and eat donuts. I mean, this is on purpose, right? I mean, this is his like perfect day in the first act is eating as many donuts and screwing as many women as he can.
Literally Robin Banks.
Yeah, and... which leads him to try to you know, hit up Andie MacDowell. And he can't, which leads him to the second act, which is to construct the perfect day himself that will lead to him sleeping with her at the end of it.
Right, but that's like, yeah. But
which doesn't work,
but again,
obviously.
Like, because that's all mechanistic.
Right, you know? Well, and there's no world in which they end up sleeping together, like, it just doesn't happen, and it never will happen because that's not the way
it actually
works.
On his best day, the one that gets him out, he doesn't sleep with her either.
And
because
she complains.
He's past that.
She complains about it, and like, why weren't you like this last night? She wanted to sleep with him at that point, you know. And yet he was like, that's not I am unconcerned, you know.
Well, so, I think he was just tired from catching all those kids falling out of trees and giving dudes the Heimlich maneuver. No, and the rest of it.
Playing the boogie woogie piano to make everybody's night better, you know, because he just happens to be the best piano player in town. But like, I think in
boogie boogie piano.
So then in Palm Springs, like, it's not about achieving enlightenment. Obviously, it's like, but it is coming to terms with your. You know, your shame.
It's like,
and then
it's,
moving
it,
past it, and
like
then
figuring out
moving
how
on
to,
with your life.
How
so
to
like,
quit waking up having made such horrible decisions
right,
the night
like,
before.
I understand that this is bad. Now, how can I change it? How can I make it better? So, like, the map of tiny perfect things, though, it's weirder than that, because it's like, it's not even about, like, I mean, I guess it's coming to terms with your grief, but it's also kind of, I mean, it's not really about achieving enlightenment, but it kind of is. I mean, the whole thing with the Tesseract is really like, it's not just that she solved a problem, it's that she did gain some insight into the way the world works. Because she knew, when she saw that spot, she was like, I have to create that moment. That's the moment that I have to create.
Right.
It's, and I know how to do it by being there, and I know what I have to say. Like, that was this flash of just insight, enlightenment that she had. But I think that like, it wasn't achieving enlightenment in the same way as, like, Bill Murray was achieving the Buddhist enlightenment. Like, that was really about becoming the Buddha, right?
Right.
But with her, it was more about, like, her enlightenment was more, I don't want to say it wasn't spiritual, you know, and it wasn't intellectual, but it was like, it was really just sort of a therapy success, you know, whereas, like, she just realized that what she was doing was not helping, and it was making it worse for her.
Well, and
you know?
And also, I mean, like, her mom, I mean, because it's literally called the Map of Tiny Perfect Things, right? Yeah. And what is the point of a map? The point of a map is to take you somewhere.
Yeah.
Or to give you to literally give you the roads that you can go down.
Right.
And so that's what they have constructed. And so you know, if you keep going the way you're going, but she's not actually going anywhere. She's just spinning her wheels.
Yeah.
And so she has to take the map and actually fucking go somewhere.
Right.
And which is what she does in the end. And it's not just a map. It's a map of tiny, perfect things that she has to learn to create them. And her mother actually, and I thought this was actually pretty heavy handed and kind of bad, but like, her mother even delivers a little monologue from her deathbed where she talks about, like, every life is a series of moments, and you just have to be in those moments. And so,
which is sort of like gesturing towards like a Buddhist style enlightenment.
It is, but it's all, but it,
but
like,
that's not really
but
where she's going.
You don't even need to get into Eastern philosophy to sort of get into, like, wanting to be, like, present and thoughtful and, you know, viewing experience as something that you have to, like, really just center yourself into and not just kind of keep going over things by rote over and over again mechanistically.
And that's why I thought, like, the ultimate, like, plot device of the Tesseract, I thought, was just a really beautiful way of describing, because I mean, it's the whole idea is that it's, you know, it's casting this shadow of, like, a three-dimensional structure onto a two-dimensional space that then is a description of a four-dimensional object, right? And that you know, we're kind of, like, thinking about, like, this in terms of space and time, because it's a map of tiny perfect things which happen at particular times. So it's not just that these things happened in space, they happen in time. And so, like, even though he was, you know, he makes it clear that, like, you know, time isn't the fourth dimension.
Right.
Like, it is. I mean, that's what he ends up, where he ends up going. But it's, like, this great little, like, way of just sort of unfolding it like origami and saying that like, because, I mean, like, take a step back, right? Like, our lives and how we interact with our world and the people in it are the shadow that we're casting, right? Like, that's the shadow is like our, it's like a ripple effect on everything around us, right? I mean, it's almost like I think that's what she's doing by constructing the, like, trying to find the pattern in constructing a 3D model of time and space, but then shining a light through it, like, kind of unintentionally. I don't think she meant to do it right, but I mean, like, that's what gave her the aha moment that, like, all of this thing as a whole is a reflection of something that we can't see, that's intangible, that's in another dimension, but that like we're a reflection of that. And that is your coming to terms with your grief or your enlightenment or, you know, it's
or
it's
your addiction you as a, or your exactly. self-destructive behavior or yep. your, you know, just
or your yeah. inattentiveness to the people around you, right. you know, I mean, like all of that stuff is just, that's the shadow that like we are the shadow that is cast right in right. Plato's cave. Like
I was just gonna say, like I'm actually like legitimately angry that I was forced to read The Republic, and now it's becoming relevant again.
God damn it!
Ah, freshman English,
yeah,
or whatever it was in.
But yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know, but I think that's what he was going for.
Oh, for sure,
with the Tesseract and the shadows, you know, because it's like that's. I mean, that it's a description of the way that we interact with the world. You know, it's
right.
yeah, it's outside of us, but you can't be outside of the world. You know, right. you can't just be an observer. You are also interacting with it.
Right. Well, right. Well, because all of these worlds, I mean, ultimately they're not interacting with them because nothing they do has consequence.
Right. It's a video game that you keep going back to a save file.
There's no causality in these worlds.
Right.
Like, I mean,
well, there's no continuity.
Not in the long term, anyway.
Right. Well, but and I think that's kind of what Palm Springs was more about, because as soon as he brings her in, there becomes, you get a track record. Like, now all of a sudden you're accountable. You can't just do the stupid shit that you were doing, because there's another person who remembers the stupid shit that you did
right.
and could be hurt by that.
Right.
You know, like, you can't observe the relationship you're in.
And as he says multiple times, pain is real.
Pain is real.
And I mean, and I don't think that he understands himself to be saying, as is emotional pain, but that is true as well.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I mean, I think that he's got it half right.
Right. But I think the problem with him is that he's emotionally stunted, right? And like, yeah. for him, like, you know, can't we just have fun, man? Why do you have to be such a downer or whatever? Why do you have to kill that guy like that? Pain is real, you know, yeah. and that's sort of him coming to terms with the fact that, you know, his life is kind of dumb.
Yeah. Well, it's meaningless.
Yeah, he it says is meaningless. He's a nihilist. He's given up.
I don't think he's a nihilist. I think he's just, you know, because say what you will about
he's beyond nihilism at this point, because it's like the end result at some point is killing yourself, but like that doesn't work. In this world,
right.
you know,
yeah.
like, you can't. I mean, and it, even like in Tiny Perfect Things, they sort of gesture at it that it's like you could probably kill yourself and you'd probably wake up the next day, but they don't want to try because it could be serious. Well, what if it doesn't? You don't know.
Well,
you know?
And also for her, I mean, like she is grappling quite intimately with death.
Yeah.
And she is not going to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like she is not going to off herself and then have the next day her mother have to deal with her death. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
I mean, because that is...
Although he jumps off the roof at some point, even though he times it perfectly
times
to match
so
with Midnight. But, like, he jumps off the roof. You
right.
know?
But I almost feel like that's like an adolescent suicidal gesture.
No, it is.
I
think he's, like, pointing at it
actual,
without actually doing it.
You know, it's not actual, you know... It's not an actual suicide attempt.
Right, or he wouldn't have timed it.
Right, no, right. I mean,
yeah. But that's not what that movie is about, you know. I mean, it's not about like
right. But yeah, but in that emotional universe, cuz that's what it is. Like these are all sort of like hermetically sealed balls. Like they are pocket universes of emotional
Speaking
states.
Of magicians.
Yeah. But I mean, it is. It is a pocket universe of specific emotional states.
Right. Which, no matter how much you shake the snow globe, by morning, all of it settles again.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it's like, it lets you, and I mean, this is gets back to the whole, like, you could experiment and see what it's like to stare at the sun all day and see what it's like to be blinded like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then wake up and you're just fine. You know? I mean, it doesn't even matter. Like, at one point, the kid in, whatever, Quentin from Tiny Perfect Things... He's
Quentin.
Like having the conversation with his dad about
Mark.
His future.
His name's Mark.
Mark. And his dad's like, you know, you can't just like do impulsive things, whatever. And he's like, hold that thought. And he like lifts up his shirt and there's this tattoo there. And his dad's like, whoa! And then it resets the day. Which is sort of great because he's talking about his future or whatever. But yeah,
it's still kind of funny.
But yeah, I mean, like, I think that's that the idea of it is that like, so I mean, think about Groundhog Day, right? So all three of these movies are very much about how you are a part of the world, mm-hmm. and how you have an effect on the world around you. Mm-hmm. And in Groundhog Day,
or that, don't,
like, he needs to take himself out of himself so he can have the best effect, right? He wants to help other people achieve that nirvana, even though, right. you know, ultimately it's up to them to get there. But in Palm Springs, it's like the opposite of that. You're not trying to achieve nirvana. You're just getting through the day in the most right. fun way possible.
Because you know? I mean, like,
and then you have to explode yourself in a cave to get out.
Like, right. Yeah, I mean, like that's why I don't want to, like, over-determine my sort of metaphorical, right. you know what I mean? Like, right. I think ultimately...
But it does all have to do with, like, your effect on the world work. Around you. Because, like, when you reset the day, you ultimately have no effect. There are no consequences, so you don't matter.
I also, I mean, because, like her narrative may be about, like, addictive or self-destructive behavior, but I think ultimately his might be about... kind of depression a little bit.
Yeah.
I
think the movie is about her.
No, I completely agree, and I don't want to overstate. I do think that there's a way in which, you know,
because he's just sort of checked out.
I suffer from depression and like the sort of like grinding sameness of feeling like things don't have meaning and the difficulty of getting out of bed and going through it all again is like that, you know, hashtag relatable, you know, right. like I get it. Right. Like, and again, I don't want to overstate these. Like, I think right. this is like, obviously this is not,
right. but you I definitely mean, don't you know get that I sense don't... from the Map of Tiny Perfect no. Things. Like, that's not about the crushing sameness, you know, no. it's about like, almost celebrating it. Like, you want to find the bits that yeah. you can then go back, you know, like bookmark them.
I mean, there's definitely a way in which, you know, because Tiny Perfect Things is very much a YA, is a young adult
mm-hmm.
thing, it's really not going to get into the sort of bleak territory that you get into with adult well, narratives.
That's not what it's for. That's not what it's doing.
No, that, you know? I mean, right. Things are about what they're about and not about other things.
Right.
But at the same time, I really do believe that they're, you know, that you're dealing with people who actually do have kind of, you know, limitless possibilities yeah. ahead of them. And so taking that away from them and forcing them to live in a moment is a much different thing than taking somebody who, even before she got stuck in a time loop, was already stuck in a time loop.
Right.
Like, those are very different narratives in terms of, like, their emotional trajectories.
Right, right, yep. Yeah, but, I mean, what they have in common, though, is that you are not alone in the world.
Right,
like, you
right.
are interacting with the world, in mm-hmm. for better or worse, but, you know, you can't take yourself out of the world.
Right, right. Yeah, totally.
It's like, you know, you're dropping a stone in the water, and it's rippling. You know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Huh.
But are you the stone or are you the waves?
Yeah. Can you separate the dancer from the dance? W.B. Yeats, can you do it? No, you can't.
In a way, I think that, like, The Map of Tiny Perfect Things is not what I would describe as a super fun movie. It's thinkier than that. It's more like...
It's thinkier than that, and I also, like...
It's more about the mechanism of the relationships.
It got me in the feels a little bit there at the end. Not even a little definitely. Bit. I was, you know, I was genuinely sort of crushed by...
Yeah, because he sets it up, like, and builds up to it in such a way that, like, when you... Because you can sort of guess what's going on, but then when it happens, you're crushed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know. And I don't think that necessarily affects the rewatchability of it. It's just like, how many times do you want to watch the piano? Not that it was a super depressing movie, but you know what I mean? It was really well constructed is all I'm saying. But it wasn't like, you know, him like, like Niles sort of just waking up every morning with his cheating girlfriend who is totally sleeping with what's-his-face the...
No, no, the, but... No,
you know,
no, but
and just sort
not,
of dealing
no,
with it every
not,
day and doesn't even
she's
care.
She's not the cheating girlfriend in the morning, though.
Yes, she is.
No, she's
she
not.
She has always been she one. Has when he wakes up, he knows that that's her trajectory, that she is inevitably going to.
He knows her trajectory, but she isn't yet. Because, like, at one point...
Does it matter? I mean, like she's got it in her.
Like, she does have it in her, and he also talks about the inevitability that she's going to, you know...
But he's just, like, so... He's, like, so beyond even accepting it that it's just sort of like, eh... I guess I'll go have a beer.
Well, I mean,
and then I'll go hang out, like, watching her fuck this other guy. Because it's like, I mean, it's going to happen every day, and it has for the last million days. You know, I mean,
right? Well, because he even says
he's dealt with it.
He even says at one point, he's like, there is no world in which these two do not end up together.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that he spent a few days like murdering everybody. Because that's the kind of person he is, and that's because he talks about having.
Did he try that?
Oh, I'm sure he murdered everybody at some point. Like, you know he did.
That's pretty bleak.
He talked about killing himself. He talked about like all of the permutations of everything. Like,
yeah.
Because I mean, she's like, I mean, who'd you sleep with? And he's like, well, I slept with you know, the dude, and you know, there's a whole like he tried out being gay, and then he's like, and then I slept with your father. And then they have a whole scene with that, which is pretty funny, but like,
he's like, Gallagher.
No, I'm just kidding.
With Peter Gallagher, and he says, no, I'm kidding, but I'm like, no, you totally banged
Peter
Gallagher.
Yeah, he probably did. And why wouldn't he? Because he's got, like, I mean, no consequences and all the time in the world. Like, you'd get bored of not sleeping with him at a certain point. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to find stuff to do.
Plus, it's Peter Gallagher, and
yeah,
he's pretty hot, even though he's, like, turned into a silver fox somehow.
Anyway, but I mean, that's his life. I don't know. I mean, I think of the three movies, Groundhog Day, Palm Springs, and Tiny Perfect Things, I would probably watch Palm Springs the most.
And some of that has to do with the fact that, like, both Tiny Perfect Things and Palm Springs were made in the last year. Like, there's a certain timeliness.
But I would
to
watch
it.
Groundhog Day the second most.
Yeah.
And then Tiny Perfect Things is one of those movies that I'm really happy to have watched, and I probably will watch again at some point.
Right.
But just because, you know.
But some of it has to do with, like rewatchability of comedies other than Hot Tub Time Machine.
I've seen it twice.
Twice now. And that's and the enjoyment you got out of the second time was how mad I was.
Kind of, yeah. It's really a movie that you have to watch with someone else.
Yeah, who's
whereas
mad?
Tiny Perfect Things, you kind of have to watch by yourself with a large bottle of wine and a kind of a box of tissues.
And some tissues, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, comedies that are fundamentally good-hearted about the human nature, because Hot Tub Time Machine is not good-hearted about human nature.
No.
Rewatchability is high because it's not like you have to be in a mood for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm going to have to be in a mood to be like crying about, you know, people's dead moms, you know?
Right.
Like I have to
no,
work
totally.
Up
Whereas
to that.
Like Groundhog Day, you could totally like watch it again and again and get like the, you know, the Pennsylvania polka, and then it's like in your head forever.
Forever. Yeah. Yeah. Ned the Head. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. I don't know how rewatchable Tiny Perfect Things is because I've only seen it the one time.
I'll probably see it again. I am going to watch it again for sure. But
then again, I don't know that I would see Palm Springs more than one more time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I would need to, but I would probably watch Groundhog Day again depending on the circumstances.
Of rewatchability, you know, like you have your like yearly movies, you have your every decade.
Yeah,
movies.
No, that's true.
You have your, you know, once and one and done.
Like, and then you have your, like, primer where it's like, I need to watch it again just to prove to myself that I still can't figure it out.
Right. To prove to myself that I just really don't need to.
Yeah. Or even, like, I mean, Edge of Tomorrow, it was like, I remember it being really engaging and interesting and whatever. And it's like, and it is. And then you watch it and you're like, yeah, I guess I don't need to see that until I forget what the plot was again.
Yeah, because it's kind of mechanical.
Yeah.
It's very clockmaker.
Anyway, I thought it was really, like, having these three movies be so similar, I thought was really cool. I mean, like, that was why I really dug the whole Perfect Day idea to describe them, because they sort of talk about it, but only Groundhog Day really is that.
Well,
the other movies are not that,
right.
You know, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
High five.
High five.